Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Juwanza. Great to have you along. Oh, my God, we got a show lined up for you today. And I'm going to just give you a little tease. We got some other shows coming up that I know that you're going to be interested in, and those shows just so happen to be with my guest that I'm going to be speaking with today, and that just so happens to be Professor Joseph T. Geiger. We're going to be discussing his book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. He's also written another book called Finding a Career for Life. We'll talk about that a bit as well during the course of today's show. But I want to invite you to go back and listen to a show that Professor and I did, oh, I guess it was about a month ago or so, on global warming. You really need to go back and listen to that show. There's been a lot of talk about global warming in the news as of late, and if you really want to get a good perspective on a topic that's been making headlines for a while now, then you really need to go back and listen to that show. Bring you up to speed, kind of keep you aware of what's happening with the planet. I mean, we do live on this planet, and we need to be aware of when things are impacting the planet or not. Discussions that make the news, and alarms that are being sounded related to conditions of the planet. We need to be aware of those things. So I invite everybody, go back and listen to that show with Professor Joseph Geiger. It's called Global Warming, and that's on the first page of the archives. You'll be glad that you did. And we got some other shows coming up on there that you're going to be very, very interested in as well. So I just wanted to let you know about that. And also, again, today we're going to be discussing his book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles. We just moved into the chapter on growing a business. So now that once you've got your business established, or shall I say, you've started it, you've done the business plan, you've got everything set, and you're ready to go, and you've been in business for a while, well, we're going to be talking about how to grow that business today. So that's going to be the topic of discussion today. So let me tell you, in case you're tuning in for the first time, Professor Geiger currently is retired, but he grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his time, his lifetime, he started and operated over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship, shall I say, and small business management. And in order to help people like yourself and myself become proficient in business and to have everything that we need to succeed, he actually wrote Entrepreneurial Success, 101 Business Principles, The Road to the Top, and the book just keeps growing and growing and growing. We're now on the fourth edition. The book is up to 105 Business Principles, and if you're serious about business, then you really need to get this book. So it's without further ado. Again, we're going through the book chapter by chapter. Can't wait to get into it. Professor, welcome back to the show. Great to have you back as always. Looking for another powerful show.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Professor, again, as I started off the show, I told the listeners about the show that we did on entrepreneurship, but on global warming. Fabulous, fabulous interview that you did about that. And just the information that you laid out relating to global warming and climate change and what it is, what it's not, that is something that all of us should be concerned with, just simply from the standpoint that we live on this planet. And even though, of course, your perspective on that is not one of the, you know, the mainstream media, it's noteworthy and important perspective, because it looks at global warming from a much broader perspective. And so I just, again, want to thank you for that interview and, again, encourage the listeners to go back and listen to that. And as I stated, we'll be doing more shows on that as well coming up. But today, Professor, again, we're getting into growing a business. We'll be starting that chapter. But for those who might not be aware, just because we're constantly getting new listeners, people might wonder, well, wow, you've been doing this for over 50 years. If you've been doing this prior to even the word entrepreneur becoming a popular part of the English lexicon, what got you into it? I mean, so long ago. before the word even became popular. What was it? Was it anything? Was it financial? I mean, was it something that forced you down the entrepreneurial path, or you just decided you wanted to be own your own business? And once after the first one, what kept you doing it?
Well, what started me is I wanted things, and I grew up on, as you said, on a Kansas farm. I'm dyslexic, and my parents, at some difficulty for themselves, you know, we're certainly not members of the Kellogg family or the something like that, sent me to a school in the East, Berkshire School, to try to where they could teach me how to read, and at that time. The word dyslexia was, again, not in the lexicon. Nobody knew about it. A few did. And so when they found out that was my problem, and it's a little hard to explain because unless you have it, and even when you have it, it's hard to explain. But at any rate, I went there, and the average student there was from wealthy New England families. Frankly, the only reason that I got in was because I was from Kansas, and I think they probably wanted to have a few students there from Indian country. And, I can remember telling my peers how every so often the Indians would ride into town and shoot up the town. And, of course, none of this was true, but it made for a great story. And so at any rate, all the other students had allowances, which I didn't. And they could go to the school had this little shop where we could go and buy ice cream and stuff, you know, that young boys like. And I didn't have it. And so I thought, well, the only way I was going to get it was to start some kind of a business. And so I started delivering papers, newspapers, New York Times newspapers, because the school was out in the middle of nowhere. It was 4 miles to the nearest town. And the students would all talk about how they missed the comic papers and the sports. And so I started that, and that gave me the money to go do what I wanted. And then when I was in college, I was making ends barely meet as a busboy and a waiter at a restaurant. And I blundered purely by accident into a business possibility. And I went from making 75 cents an hour, which sounds like slave labor, but that's what it was back then, and to almost $7 an hour. And I'm not real smart, but boy, that one I could handle. And the $7 an hour would today be $158 an hour by manufacturing very, very small trout flies for fishing. For catching trout. And all of a sudden I went from no money to, hey, I can afford to pay attention. So after that, it was pretty easy to decide that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And after that, I also understood that finding business opportunities were everywhere. All you had to do was know how to look. And it wasn't the question of can you find a business opportunity. The question really was, can you narrow down the 50 or so that you found to one that you will actually prosecute? And so that's how that worked.
Well, if I may ask you this, when it came to you starting your own business, even going all the way back to the first one, and when you look at the peers that you had at the time, was that, now again, you were doing it before the word entrepreneur became popular, but were others doing it? Talking about your peers back then?
No, not really. I was the only one that had any kind of business in the school. Nowadays, I'm sure that all kinds of the kids do, because today you can start a business on the internet, on your computer, And you and the computer are the only two people who know when the computer isn't talking. So you can start something, you know, on your own and be in business. But back then, you really couldn't. You know, this was many, many years before the existence of computing. You know, as a matter of fact, IBM had just been founded shortly before this period of time that I'm talking about, and of course, the small computer, desktop computer, was decades away. So I was the only one, and it was just pure necessity. You know, if I wanted to buy an ice cream cone, I was going to have to figure out how to get the money to buy the ice cream cone. It was just that simple.
Well, when you look at people today and just and the technology that's available today that was not at the time when you started your businesses back in college, because I'm sure that is a large percentage of I guess the essence of my question. When you look at what's available in terms of the tools that are out there that can help a person start and grow and ultimately prosper in a business, do you see any, what remains then, shall I say, as viable excuses for those who say, I would like to be in business, but for this, you know, I would be, you know, because there are a lot of things that are out there to run out there when you were doing
that. I think that is just, they're making excuses. It is so easy to start one today. And the first half dozen that I started, the things that make them easy today didn't exist. I mean, you know, if you take I'll give you a great example. My daughter, about 5 years ago, four or five years ago, had a child. And what she found out was little baby grabs everything. And so she's holding little baby, and little baby grabs the necklace around her neck and yanks on it and wants to chew on it. So she decided she wanted something for the child to do that with, and she bought a necklace that was made out of cotton string, fairly heavy cotton string, and wooden balls that were pretty heavy wood. You know, they weren't pine, they were oak or something, even maple, probably. I think they were probably maple, and instead of being painted, they were dipped in food dye. So a little kid could reach up and grab them and stick them in her mouth, and it wouldn't hurt her. Guess where those were made? This was 4 years ago. Guess where they were made? They were made in Ukraine, in Russia. And Michaela, my daughter, bought them online. So here was this lady in Ukraine, in Russia, starting a business and selling her wares to somebody in the United States. Well, 10 years ago, that couldn't happen. There was no real internet 10 years ago. So her business was not possible 10 years ago. Well, she could do it, but she would have to sell her wares to people in Ukraine, you know, in the town that she was in. And today she can sell them to somebody in China or in the United States and get paid in dollars, which is instantly transferred into rubles, and bingo, she's in business. Well, that can't happen until 8 or 10 years ago. So somebody who says that except for something, I would do that, you're making an excuse. That's all it is. I mean, that's just simply all it is, because there are thousands upon thousands of business ventures that 10 or 20 years ago could not happen, and today are established.
Well, let me ask you this. Before we get into the growing a business chapter, because I think this is a good conversation that we're having right now, just even to be able to identify a business opportunity, do you almost happen to have an entrepreneurial bent? You know, would you almost have to even think like an entrepreneur, even if
I've taught hundreds of students, and that's one of the things I teach. There's three ways of finding a business opportunity. I'll go through them very quickly. The first one is the what Edison did. You find something people want, and you supply it. He knew people wanted lights, and at the time, gas light and candles were it, and he came up with electricity. The second one is where you find an existing product, most likely, or service, but and you find a new use for it. And an excellent example is the history of Post-its. That was found by a 3M scientist, came up with a glue that didn't stick very well. It was reusable, but frankly, it didn't stick. And it took him 5 years to find out how to use it, and he found out how to use it when somebody said to him, "Could you put this on the back of a piece of paper so I can use it as a bookmark?" Bingo. And Post-its were formed. And until the patent ran out after 15 years, they had a patent for 5 years, but they didn't use it. They had this stuff. But what the heck are you going to use a glue for that doesn't stick? So Post-its became for 15 years the most profitable product that 3M made. And 3M made some whoppers of profitable products, and this one beat them all. The third one, as you go through life and you see things you like or you don't like, you ask yourself, is there a business opportunity here? And that's how I found my fly tying business when I was fishing on a river in the early fall in Colorado. And I was catching lots of fish, but nobody else was. And an older gentleman asked me what I was catching them on. I showed him. He said, "Well, I'll buy three of those little tiny flies for me for $10. Well, wow. I mean, I was making 75 cents an hour. And he offered me $10 for something that I could buy and make in 20 minutes. And yes, sir, you bet you can. So that's how that one started. And so you ask yourself, is there a business opportunity here? And sure enough, there was. And I went from what would today be about $77.50 an hour to $158 an hour. So it was a pretty good one. And all of them I found the same way. I find something happens, and you say, well, why isn't anybody supplying this? Maybe I should. So away you go. You do a business plan, cash flow forecast to figure out how much money you need, and you go for it.
Well, you know, once people have already laid the foundation for their business, they've decided that they found what they view as a business opportunity, and they write the business plan, and they, you know, do the cash flow forecast, and, you know, they're in business. And I think that for most entrepreneurs, the thought is, of course, I want my business to grow, to expand, to grow, to generate profit. But a lot of people might not know the ins and outs of what it takes to grow a business and what principles are involved in that. So we're going to be talking about that, everybody. So, because if you don't mind, we're going to start with Chapter 8 today, Growing a Business, and principle number 62 is the key to success is what customers want, not what you want. Take it away.
Well, I tell everybody that it doesn't make any difference whether you're building locomotive engines or aircraft carriers for the U.S. government or you're mowing lawns for your neighbor. You need to keep your customer happy. If your customer is happy, they'll stay with you. And if they're not happy, they will go find somebody else who will make them happy, and you will get to go broke because you'll have no customers. The thing that kills most businesses is they don't have enough customers who are buying their products. Now, a lot of folks have quite a few customers, and they squander the income from them, and that forces them into bankruptcy, and that's something that's fairly easy to do. You need to guard against that. But in the basic foundation of any business is customers. And if you don't keep your customers happy, they're going to leave you, and you're going to go broke. It's just that simple. So you need to keep your customers happy. I was at VCU being a mentor to a bunch of college kids who had programs, and I heard at every one of these evening meetings they would have a speaker. I was kind of the last speaker, but they had others. And I heard one of the speakers say that she said, ask them, what is the main purpose of a business? And somebody said, make a profit. And she said, louder. And they all shouted, make a profit. Well, that's true. But how do you do that? And how you do that is keep your customers happy. So make a profit is kind of a fallout. What the in going to a entrepreneurship class in college, they tend to teach you what you should do, but they do not teach you how to do it. And that's what my little book is all about, how you do it. So how do you make a profit? Well, one of the ways you make a profit is to keep your customers happy. And if you don't do that, it's not possible to make a profit.
Well, Professor, what would you say to someone who says, well, okay, I haven't necessarily found a niche. I am in a competitive business, okay, where my competitors and I do the exact same thing. The only difference on the surface might be price. I could try to undercut them, to get more of the market share, if that would work. Everybody's got good customer service. So everybody preaches good customer service, so everything pretty much is the same in that. So what would you say to somebody who would say, well, okay, I, in terms of keeping the customer happy, with all other things being equal, the only thing that I could think that could make my customer base any happier than they already are or better or happier than the competition would be to undercut the competition on price.
Well, you should ask yourself, do you buy things based on price? And it depends upon what the item is. If you're talking about bottled water, the answer is probably yes. If you're talking about a car, the answer is probably no. And the reason I say that is because tell me what the difference in transportation value of getting from point A to point B from a $12,000 Kia to a $120,000 Mercedes-Benz. There's a big difference in price, but based on what you just said, nobody would ever, ever, ever buy a Mercedes-Benz, yet they do. Nobody, frankly, would ever buy a full-line Ford, but they do, because there's always going to be something cheaper. And people do not buy cheap. They buy desire. They buy what is the perceived value to you of the product. If you're buying water in a water bottle, there's two perceived values. One, that it is safe, and two, the water bottle doesn't leak. Now, beyond that, there isn't much difference. They try, you know, if you look at the ads for bottled water, you see all kinds of things that are pretty ethereal, pretty mythical. But there really isn't much difference in just plain water. However, in most other products, there is. And if you don't believe me, look at the sort of stuff that you buy. Are your shoes, do you buy $50 sneakers or $100 sneakers? Or are you like me, who have finally found a shoe that I can buy for $30, except when it's on sale at $15, and then I buy two pair, and they last me for at least another year. And so I buy the $15 shoe because what I want is something is comfortable. If I'm speaking, I can stand for hours, and they don't hurt, and they don't wear out. So I buy $15 shoes that do that. I have never in my life bought a pair of Air Jordans, and I think it is highly unlikely I ever shall. I mean, I'm just not up to doing that. That is true perceived value. However, it's pretty obvious that other people have a very different perceived value than I have, in that otherwise Jordan wouldn't sell any shoes. You know, his name on them wouldn't mean anything. Well, it means a great deal. And people buy them because they perceive the value of the shoe is something they want. And cost has nothing to do with it.
You know, it's
would Jordan sell more shoes if he cut the price in half? No, I don't think so. He certainly wouldn't make more profit.
You know, when I was a kid, there was a shoe, speaking of tennis shoes, they were called PF Flyers. I don't know if you remember those, Professor, but they supposedly made you run faster and jump higher. They were called PF Flyers. So I guess the hype that you can generate surrounding your product would certainly help with the perceived value. If you can generate enough hype, whether it be through that hype being through a promise of running faster and jumping higher, or the promise that if you're seen in this particular car, you know, you'll if you pull up to the event in this car, you're gonna be the all eyes are gonna be on you, or
right,
you know, whatever the case is. The hype has a lot to do with the perceived value.
Right? Well, that's mm-hmm. in pricing things. That's how professionals really price things. They price things to the perceived value. So so they look at things and they say, what do other people think of these? And they go do a lot of research on trying to find out how people perceived the value of whatever it is, whether it's shoes or cars or lettuce. You know, it doesn't make any difference what it is. How do people perceive the value? So they perceive value where they will pay twice as much for lettuce that they don't spray with pesticides. Now, whether or not they do spray them with pesticides beats me. That may or may not be true. But it is true that people will pay a whole lot more for vegetables that are grown in a particular way, or that at least the people who supply them say they're grown in a particular way. They'll pay more for them. My wife absolutely is a 100% believer in Eggland's Best. eggs, you know, for mm-hmm. making fried eggs. Now, I grew up on a farm. I know where eggs come from. We had, at one time, we had 3,000 chickens, and I took care of them. And I collected the eggs every day, and I washed them, I grated them, and I sold them. And I am, and all this stuff on Eggland's Best is way, way better. They cost twice as much as what I buy, and I cannot tell the difference. But my wife thinks she can, and so she's more than willing to pay twice as much for eggs than I pay.
Mm-hmm.
And
perceived value, huh?
Perceived value. That's, I mean, when somebody says, "Well, I'm gonna undercut my competitor," all I can tell them is, "I hope your competitor is not Walmart, because you will not succeed."
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. We're going through his book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. You should actually see the cover of this book, everybody. It's a winding road. It looks like, I believe it's in China, isn't it, Professor?
Yes, it is.
And there's a road, and it's going up the mountainside, it appears, and there's a road to the top. I mean, there's a way to get... There's a path. You're not going to just start a business and wake up one day and have not done the prerequisites for success. You're not going to get there if you don't write a business plan. The odds are against you that you become successful in business. If you don't have a cash flow forecast, the odds are against you that you will be successful in business. And so that's why this book was written, to help you and I become successful in business. And again, we're going through the book chapter by chapter, principle by principle, and we're in the chapter on growing a business up to principle 63 now, which is profitability is the goal, not growth. Now, that's interesting, because again, this chapter is on growing a business. Okay, so again, could you explain that, Professor? Profitability is the goal, not growth.
Well, when you start a business and it does start to grow, it is very difficult to stay away from the siren song that says, "Well, I got to make it bigger. If I make it bigger, then I can buy things better. I can make more money, and because I can buy things instead of buying a dozen of something, I can buy four dozen, and I can get them for a little lower price. And so I'm going to sell more, so maybe I should open another store or a couple more stores." And then when you get to that point, then you want to open more stores, because you keep thinking that, well, the problem is that there's a whole lot of moving parts here. And very often what happens is you have to understand what makes you profitable. And what makes you profitable is not that you can buy your products for slightly less if you have more. What makes you profitable is your people. And if you have built a really good team, and your really good team is making you profitable, when you open another store, when you grow the business, how are you going to do that? Well, physically, what is really going to happen is you're going to take part of your really good team, and you're going to put the part of the really good team in the new store, and that part of the team is charged with finding other people to make it a self-sufficient and super good team, and your current team is, well, you'll just add a few people, and it'll keep going. Well, that's great, except it doesn't happen that way very often. What often happens is you take the people who are making your business successful, you put them elsewhere in the new business, and you're assuming that the current business is going to keep right on being the cash cow. Well, what often happens is once those really good people leave and they go to your other location, well, your current location stops being the cash cow, and the new one needs cash to generate, to get going. And so you have a new one that is eating cash, and your old one, the cash cow, is not supplying it. And granted, you're growing, but you're growing yourself into bankruptcy. So you want to be real, real careful. And there's some other things that go into that. You make sure that you do a cash flow forecast, and that deals with numbers. But you also better make sure that when you start off the new one, you don't rob your good people, and they go to the new one, and your current one dies. You think that won't happen, but it will. Often, it will.
You know, Professor, you mentioned the cash flow forecast, and that's in the very next principle, and I think we can go there. And that is principle 64, and I wanted to just ask a question about that, which is, if your cash flow forecast finds a financial problem, you have found a business problem. Again, if your cash flow forecast has found a financial problem, you have found a business problem. How, and this is a rhetorical question, but how important is it to really get into to have a cash flow forecast, but not just a cash flow forecast, because the point that I'd like to bring out here is the paying attention to detail. Of course, with a cash flow forecast, you're going to be paying attention to detail, but just in general, there may be people that might feel like, oh, I've got this great idea for a business, you know, I think I found a niche, but they might not be necessarily good at paying attention to detail. But when you're in business for yourself, I mean, you might be able to get away with it for a while if you're working for somebody else until they find out that you're not paying attention to detail. But if you're working for yourself, you definitely better be paying attention to detail. And, of course, that's where the cash flow forecast comes in. But just as a general thought, how important is that? Because, again, you'll be thinking about things that you just never had to think about before when you were working for someone else.
Well, I think that's true. That one of the problems with the cash flow forecast is finding a cash flow template that is a good one. The other day I did a little search for somebody, and I typed in free cash flow forecasts in parentheses, three cash flow forecast templates in parentheses. And when I Googled it, I got 1,950,000+ of them.
Wow.
I have no idea whether any of those, I'm sure some of them are good, but I think some of them are not worth a damn. And so how do you find a cash flow forecast that is a good one? And my answer to that is, the cash flow forecast must be in exquisite detail. So, for example, if you want to start a Ford car dealership, you need to understand to start with that a Ford automobile dealership does not sell cars. A Ford dealership sells F-150 trucks. It sells it sells Thunderbirds. It sells Ford cars. And it doesn't just sell Ford cars. It sells red ones and white ones and blue ones and black ones. And you need to be able to pick out what are the buyers going to buy. Are they going to buy chartreuse Ford cars or trucks that are fire engine red? Well, maybe, and maybe not. But the time to start losing money is when you're doing it on paper. And the only way you can do that is to do a cash flow forecast in great detail. So let's say that that doesn't mean very much to you and I, but your wife might want to start a dress store, and she mm-hmm. ropes you into starting a dress store. Well, you don't know sikkim about dresses, but the one thing that the ladies who buy dresses, all you got to do is watch them for a little while, and they see all kinds of stuff about a dress that you and I don't see. Well, you better get somebody in there, hopefully your wife, who can see those subtle differences and can decide that she has four different brands of dresses, and she better be able to pick the ones that people will buy. And so a dress store doesn't sell just dresses. It sells particular brands of dresses in particular colors. And again, if you don't stock the right brand and the right color and the right cut, they aren't going to sell. So you need to get in great detail. So when you do this, how much are you going to spend in advertising and when? Do you spend in advertising in the spring and the summer and the fall, or yes, yes, and yes, but in certain periods that you do? And when you do that, when you decide to spend more money for advertising, have you got the stock, the dresses for ladies when they come in to buy, to actually buy them? Because if you don't have them, you start this, you spend $500 or $5,000 on advertising, all these ladies come in, your stock is going to be here next week, but it's not here this week. Well, they aren't going to come back next mm-hmm. week. They're here now. Mm-hmm. They want it now. If they wanted it next right. week, they would have ordered it online. But they didn't want it next mm-hmm. week. They want it now. Do you have it now? No, I don't. Oh, darn. So you've lost and lost. First of all, you've spent money on advertising to no avail. You've gotten people coming in to look at your dresses, and you don't have them, so they're mad. So you pissed off your customers. What could go wrong with this picture? Yeah, everything already has gone wrong. And so when you do your cash flow forecast, you need to touch base with all of those little details and make sure that they happen. The other thing you need to understand with a cash flow forecast is that it tells you what your income is and what your costs are week by week, month by month. And if you find a cash flow forecast that is a yearly cash flow forecast, it is totally worthless, because we don't do business on a yearly basis. We do business on a daily basis, certainly a monthly basis. So you need to figure out what your costs are per month. And if you cannot make payroll on Friday, you are broke. And if you have all kinds of money 2 weeks from Friday, doesn't make any difference. Your good people have already left, and you're broke. So the cash flow forecast, to answer your question, I've kind of got this in a circuitous route, but it needs to be in great detail. You cannot have it in too much detail. So you spend an extra 3 weeks or a month working out your cash flow forecast. You're going to learn something during that period. And the something that you'll learn is probably where you were going to lose money, and now you've found it, and you've figured out how you can prevent that from happening.
You know, I just want to say to everybody that's listening that the portions that you're hearing now, I mean, it's all important. Everything that you know, every word that you hear come out of Professor's mouth is not spoken just because he likes to hear himself talk. This is very important information, and this portion is one of the most important portions, I dare say, in the entire book. This is one of the most important principles in the entire book. As Professor has stated on other shows, that a crazy proportion, a crazy percentage of businesses, new businesses, fail within the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I would bet money that of those that do fail within the first year, a large majority of them do not have a cash flow forecast. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. And those that do have a cash flow forecast have done a yearly one, which is totally worthless. I mean, they mm-hmm. just wasted their time because there is no way that you can do a yearly cash flow forecast and learn anything. And the purpose of a cash flow forecast is for you, the entrepreneur, to learn something, to learn what your monthly costs are in as great a detail as you possibly can, and to make sure that what you put down there is realistic. Every single one that I've ever done, I've learned a lot on, and I've been surprised. I thought that one thing would happen, and it didn't. Something else showed up, and the more detailed I made my cash flow forecasts, the more profitable the business became. And then the last part is, of course, is to execute the cash flow forecast, and the way you do that is you execute it every single day. So you pull that when you first get started, it's monthly, and you should break that down before the first month to weekly. What am I going to do this week, and what am I going to do next week? And because we're dealing with this week, then you go through what do I need to do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to make this thing happen. And if you do that, your chances of being successful have gone up many, many fold.
You know what I think, Professor? I think for a lot of people who think about becoming an entrepreneur, when they're thinking about it or dreaming about it, shall I say, you know, and they're thinking about or dreaming about how much money they can make, and they might see themselves, you know, because the imagination is very real. You know, we can use our minds to imagine and visualize ourselves doing a lot of different things. And somebody might visualize themselves, and after they start their new business, you know, laying on an island somewhere, enjoying the fruits of their labor.
Yeah,
but
right.
Many people might not visualize themselves pouring over a cash flow forecast. But that is going to be required if you want to get to that beach, you know, and lay out on the beach and enjoy the fruits of your labor. You need to start visualizing yourself doing the cash flow forecast. You're going to have to do that. You can't skip steps in this, correct, Professor?
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think there's something else here that you're missing. And the fruits of your labor are very likely not laying on the beach someplace, but seeing it grow. And that's that to me is I look back at the businesses I've had, and in many cases with intense pride, because I did that. Nobody else did it. I did it. Now, granted, the employees were a big part of it, and I'm certainly not going to take anything away from them because they were the ones who were out there in the trenches hour by hour. But nevertheless, I did it. And what I found was when I got into, after a number of years and some pretty severe mistakes, and I started doing cash flow forecasts for this, I started doing it in it with existing businesses, not with new businesses, because when I started this, there was no such course that I could take of building a business or small business management or entrepreneurship. None of that was offered in colleges. So I had to learn it the hard way. The hard way is you make mistakes. And the way you know you make mistakes is when you looked at your checkbook and it was darn near empty and you had, you know, here it is Monday, and on Friday you got a $12,000 payroll coming up, and where, pray tell, am I going to get the $12,000? Because I certainly don't have it today. So when I got into doing this and started poring over it, frankly, after a couple of months of doing it, it got more and more fun because I could foresee things happening, I could foresee problems coming and figure out how to avoid them. And I had a big time. It was fun doing it. And you really weren't thinking of, well, I have to do this in order so I can go lay on the beach someday. Not at all. I have to do this because this is exciting. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I still find it that way. And I think successful business people find it that way.
Everybody, my special guest again is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. You want to be successful, okay, in business? Do you have a mentor? Okay, well, this book could even serve as a mentor of sorts because the wisdom that's given in the book can aid you tremendously in business and in life, not just in business. I've used some of the principles in the book just when I've needed to make a life's decision about certain things. One is that comes readily to mind is what's the downside when making a decision mm-hmm. about something? To ask yourself, you know, what's the downside? If I do this, is there a downside? And what is that downside? I need to be aware of that, you know. And there are other principles in this book that you will also be able to use, not just in your business, but in life. So you get a double benefit from the book just by being able to apply it to more than one situation. Professor, we've got 10 minutes left in the show, and I don't know if you want to tackle the next one, which would be add value to your product or service. Did you want to hold that or do you want to take that?
Why don't we hold that and talk maybe about a few other things first here.
Okay.
And see if we can't. One of the things I really want to stress on this book is different, I think, from most other books and certainly all other classes that I've college courses that I've taken in business planning. The other courses that you take in college, they teach you what you should do, but they do not teach you how you should do it. And once you get out and running your own business, as I'm sure you can verify, you stop being very interested in what you should do, and you become extremely interested in how you should do it. Because
correct.
Not knowing how you should do it is a bad deal. Because that's the only thing you're interested in. Once you're actually running the business and it's your money that you're writing checks on, it's your bank account, it's not somebody else's, it's yours. And what you really want to learn or want to know is how you should do it. And we talked about that. What you should do is make a profit. How do you do that?
Right.
You know, So I have in the book is a little section on making decisions, the six principles of making a decision. And so what you should do, well, you should make good decisions. How, pray tell, do you do that? And if you don't know how to do it, then knowing what you should do doesn't have a whole lot of value to you. I mean, it does when
that's
you're
true.
In college and you're taking tests. But once you get out on your own and running a business, it is how to do things. And that's what the principles are all about. I tell stories about each one of them. And the purpose of the story is to tell people how I did it in this particular case or how a friend or somebody else did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really is important in a business.
Professor, before we tell everyone how they can get your book, if you don't mind, if just sharing, if there was one thing that you could say was the biggest, well, I don't even want to use the word misconception about business, because again, it's not like when you started your first business, you know, making and selling trout flies, that you had, it wasn't a premeditated thing. It wasn't like you say, oh, you know, I'm going to go into my business, I'm going to start making trout flies. It wasn't until the guy came to you that you realized that, oh, I found a business opportunity here. But since then, what would you say was your biggest shock? Was there, I mean, when it comes to business, was it, go ahead.
Well, let me, rather than in my particular case, because I started so young, you know, I understood that when I first started, that Sunday was the only day that at a boarding school you could sleep in, and you didn't have to be at breakfast at a certain time, otherwise you didn't eat. But I had a business to run. I had papers to deliver, so I couldn't sleep in. Nobody else, everybody else could, but I couldn't. And that, you know, by the time I was out of college in my late 20s and early 30s, and so on, it was just a part of life, and long hours were a part of life. But very successful executives that have worked for big companies retire, and they get bored, and they thought, well, I'll start a little business. And one of the things that people have found out over and over again, these executives, when they're asked about what was the biggest surprise of having your own business rather than working for General Motors, they almost always said the long hours and the high stress. That was, that turned up over and over again. You could just about forecast it. You could say, you know, so you met somebody who's just going to start. They've been working for a big company. They made a lot of money, and they retired, but they want to have something to do. And you can tell them, your big surprise, my friend, is that it's going to take way more time than you thought, and it's going to be a much higher stress. And they laugh at you. But then 6 months later, a year later, if you talk to them again, they'll say, you were right. Boy, this, you know, I thought that being the vice president of something or other for General Motors was high stress. I didn't have a clue what high stress was all about. And the reason is, it's your checkbook. There's a real interesting book called Ayatollah, and it's about the guy who started at Ford. He ended up at Chrysler, trying to bail Chrysler out of bankruptcy. And he said that while he was at Ford, he got up to where he was president of Ford, and he said, "Hell, I slept great. I didn't worry. Things really were easy to go. There was hard decisions, but nevertheless, this wasn't tough." And then when I got into to Chrysler, all of a sudden I was snapping at my family. I wasn't sleeping well. I was getting up in the early morning and walking around, and I finally figured out what the problem was. And the problem was, at Chrysler, I had the checkbook. At Ford, I didn't. I just said, we need to do this, and the $100 million or the $2 billion showed up, poof, out of a cloud, you know. It rained money on you all of a sudden. Well, when I was at Chrysler, it didn't rain money on me. I had the checkbook. And so, but that.
You meant Iacocca, didn't you?
Iacocca, yeah. I think
you said Ayatollah.
Ayatollah, yeah.
Lee, right? Lee,
it's a fascinating book, as a matter of fact. But I highly recommend it.
I've actually read that book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. It is a good book.
Fascinating book.
Behind the scenes gives you the thought process of Lee Coca, and it is worth reading. So, in addition to Professor Geiger's book, definitely get that. Get that one as
get
well.
Mine
Professor,
first.
How can I get your book?
Well, you can get my book at Well, what's wrong with me? At Amazon, or you can get it by going to theroadtothetop.com and order it there, and I'll sign it and send it to you. Costs the same either way, but I think you'll find it's a very, very valuable tool.
I would recommend everybody, even if you're taking the position and you're listening, you're hearing this show, and you're saying, I know that being an entrepreneur is not my thing or whatever, I don't want to start my own business. Well, you might know someone who does, okay? It might be a younger person or just somebody that you know would benefit from this information. A lot of times people, kick around the idea, they throw around the idea, but having something, a book like this in hand can be so valuable to a person who you may know knows nothing about business, but they have great ideas, but you know because you know them that they don't have any clue about how to begin a business, how to write a business plan, anything about what you just heard about the cash flow forecast, which is a very important part of this whole process. So get the book for them. If not for yourself, you can get the book for them, and you can save them a lot of heartache, a lot of headache, and save them a lot of money and time as well. Professor, thank you so much for being my guest today. As always, you give us a lot to chew on, everybody, but I guarantee you, you got to get the book. It's one thing to hear Professor come on and do an interview on the principles, but when you have the book, you have the stories as well. So, again, I've read the book like four times, so I highly recommend it. And I know that once you read the book, you'll highly recommend it as well. Professor, any parting words for our listeners today? Again, thanks for being my guest today.
Well, I'll see you next time.
Okay. Everybody, Professor comes on every other week, every other Tuesday, okay? So make sure you mark your calendars. He's going to be back. And, again, stay tuned. Follow the show. If you don't follow the show, then you won't know the other shows that we'll be doing with Professor coming up very, very soon. But if you just click follow, then every time I do a show, regardless of the guest, you'll be notified, and you'll be notified of the guest, the time, the topic, and the date. All right, so everybody, again, thank you for tuning in, Professor. As always, great show. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Everybody, that is Professor Joseph Geiger. Again, the book is Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. If you decide you're going to Google the book, then make sure that you, when you Google it, you put in 105 Business Principles, because there are a lot of entrepreneurial success books on the market. So if you want this one, make sure that you put in, when you Google it, when you put in the search, 105 Business Principles. Again, everybody, my name is Jawanza, and I thank you so much for your time. Again, this book is very, very important. Now, for those who are familiar with the different cycles, the different 11 laws of God and the different cycles, you know that we're in the spiritual cycle of Haruka Kahuli, which deals with entrepreneurship and such and other things. But it could be, let's just talk for a second about Bazi. Okay, you could be in your Bazi astrology wealth cycle. but you can be in your wealth cycle and still lose money if you don't know what you're doing. Okay? So you want to make sure that you are doing everything you can to stack the odds in your favor that you will be successful. How do you do that? Part of it is listening to successful people. Part of it is doing what successful people did. Some things you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Some things you just do what others did, and you get the results that they got. In many cases, okay, wisdom is wisdom, all right? And if it's not for you at this time, let's say you heard something today that can't benefit you today. Well, it might benefit you tomorrow, or it may benefit someone that you know today, okay? So purchase the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles by Professor Joseph T. Geiger. If you are an entrepreneur and you are serious about your business, then you will do everything that you can to stack the odds in your favor that you will be successful. To all of you entrepreneurs out there, I wish you nothing but success. Who am I? My name is Jawanza. I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Catch out.